What is going on, sports fans? Welcome into another edition of The Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, and ESPN Pensacola podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Got a lot to talk about on today's show, especially in the NBA, and that's where we're going to start. The Lakers. Look, yesterday we talked about it on the show. We talked about J.J. Redick was the favorite, at least in that point in time. And I even said, until pen hits paper and that ink dries, something could change. Well, this morning, something definitely changed. Looks like the Lakers have definitely found another potential head coach. This one is actually starting to gain a little bit more momentum. J.J. Redick came out yesterday and said, look, I'm really not going to talk about the Laker job until I'm done broadcasting the NBA Finals, which is going to be another week or so. So we're not really going to hear much from his side as far as what's happening there, as far as talks or communication between him and that organization in LA. But we do know that yesterday afternoon, the Lakers reached out to UConn's Dan Hurley. Of course, Coach Hurley won the last two national championships in college basketball with UConn the last 2 years, with back-to-back. First team to do that since the Florida Gators in 06 and 07. And it looks like there actually could be a legitimate deal done soon. GM Rob Pelinka and owner Jeannie Buss for the Lakers reached out to have preliminary talks yesterday. As they were having those talks, they both kind of discovered that there was a lot of mutual interest in the job. And it looks like the Lakers are actually putting together a deal to offer him. And it is not a small deal either. This would be a record-setting deal for a head coach in the NBA. So the Lakers are going all in on Dan Hurley, it seems like. And it looks like there's a lot of mutual interest. They're going to continue to move forward with these talks and continue to have conversations. Of course, we've seen it before where this has been the case with a coach, whether it's been college football, the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, whatever, any sport. Across the landscape of professional or semi-pro sports, we've seen this where there seems to be mutual interest. It seems like they're going to offer a great deal, and then nothing ever happens. But I would be very surprised if Dan Hurley is not the next coach of the Los Angeles Lakers after hearing the news that broke this morning. Of course, Dan he's a guy who's very structured, very organized, great player developer. So if you're an organization that is potentially looking at life after LeBron James, you're going to want a guy that's going to being able to bring in young talent and help develop them, and that's what you'll get with Dan Hurley. You'll also get a guy who's going to do things his way, right? He's a player's coach. His players love to play for him, but he is going to do things his way, which does bring an interesting question up as far as LeBron James goes, because LeBron does have a track record of those coaches who do things their way and don't really kind of take advice or instruction from their players. Yeah, he doesn't really get along with them that well. Ty Lue being a great example of that, right? I mean, you know, he butt heads there, and he ended up leaving Cleveland because of it. So I don't know how this would go with LeBron. LeBron still has the opportunity coming up June 29th to opt out of his contract and enter free agency, and if he does that, he can either restructure a deal with the Lakers, or he can actually go and see what other teams are willing to offer him. So we'll see what happens if Dan Hurley is brought in. Look, I think if you're LeBron James, you're going to close out your career as a Laker. I think you couldn't do a better job of getting a coach in there than you would with Dan Hurley. You're going to win a couple of championships if Dan Hurley becomes your coach. Dan is that type of guy. It takes a special coach to go from the college level to the professional level and have success, right? Billy Donovan, for all the success he had at University of Florida, he's been okay in the NBA, whether it was OKC or now with the Chicago Bulls. He's been okay. And look at how good of a coach he is, right? It takes a special coach to transition from the college level to the NBA and have success. I think Dan Hurley's the type of guy that can do that, not just from the way he runs an organization, but the way he coaches a team, the way he develops the players, all the things we talked about. So definitely could be very smart for the Lakers to add Dan Hurley. And something this morning driving in is brought up on Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio. The Lakers, if they do bring in Dan Hurley, they've got a couple of first-round picks, right? The draft is coming up on free agency. This could be a situation to where if the Lakers bring in Dan Hurley, they could use those first-round draft picks as a monopoly to trade and go and find somebody that is already an established superstar. right? Or they could just kind of, you know, use those first-round picks, maybe work out some trades to kind of help alleviate some cap space for them. And then they could go after somebody in free agency. We talked about the number of players this year that could potentially be free agents, right? Paul George being one of them. Imagine Paul George coming over, playing with LeBron and Anthony Davis on a team that is coached by Dan Hurley. That would be, it would be fun to watch if you're a Lakers fan. If you're not a Lakers fan, it wouldn't be that fun to watch because the Lakers would be pretty darn good. So don't be surprised that if they do bring in Dan Hurley, the Lakers aren't done making moves yet in the offseason. I completely agree with what they were saying on Unsportsmanlike this morning. I think that they'll definitely make some moves and move some things around and try to find a way to go after getting another superstar to pair with that duo they already have there in L.A. So that's what's happening with the Lakers coaching search. Some updated news there. But the big story in the NBA right now, well, that is the big story in the NBA. But how about the fact we've got game one of the NBA Finals tonight? That is definitely going to be lots of fun. The Dallas Mavericks, the Boston Celtics facing off for the first time in the NBA Finals. Obviously, the Celtics being led by Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They've been a big key factor of getting them to this point in the season. They got redemption on their mind, right? Ever since 2022 season ended and they lost to the Warriors in a six-game series in the NBA Finals, they have really kind of come out and said, you know what? We are going to work and build this team and this organization to get back to this point. And when we get back to this point, we are taking advantage of every opportunity and we are going to go out and actually come home with the hardware this time. They made it back. They did exactly what they said. They built the organization back up. They've climbed through the NBA the last couple of seasons. They are now back in the NBA Finals and they feel like they have a great, great opportunity at winning. And I think they do. As a matter of fact, I've picked the Celtics to win in a six-game series. I think this is going to be a fun back and forth early on, but I think the later in this series we get, it's going to show through that Boston is a little bit better of a team, and they're going to be able to pull away, and I think, end this in six. If it goes seven, it wouldn't surprise me. But again, my pick for this is Boston in six. On the other side, Luka and Kyrie, look, they see an opportunity. This was the end goal, right? When they came together a couple of seasons ago and said, you know what? Let's play on this same team. Let's make this duo happen. It could be very special and very dangerous for the Dallas Mavericks. And they've paid off on that. They've gotten to the promised land, right? They've got to the Western Conference Finals. What was it? Two of the last 3 years. They've now finally managed to take that next step and get to the NBA Finals, and they've got a great opportunity here. So Luka and Kyrie see it kind of from a different landscape than Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown for the Celtics, where for them it's redemption. For the Celtics, it's redemption. For the Mavs, it's, look, we've got a great opportunity to do exactly what we set out to do a couple of seasons ago when we started building this team to be what it is today. So both of these teams kind of on different paths, but ultimately going to be leading to the same spot. I think a couple of big things for this, if there is anything that's going to tip the scale into Dallas's favor, other than the fact that Luka and Kyrie suit up for them each and every night. Jason Kidd, he's no stranger to the NBA Finals. He's been here five other times before, whether it's as a player or as an assistant coach. He did win one as a player with Dallas. He also won one as an assistant coach with the Lakers a couple of seasons ago. So he's got an opportunity here to lead now a team as a head coach and get an NBA title. So I think Jason Kidd being familiar and having that experience with the NBA Finals definitely going to be able to help the Dallas Mavericks. Kristaps Porzingis going to be back in the lineup. He's expected to suit up and play tonight in game one. That's going to be huge for the Celtics. I mean, remember, when he goes down in the first round against the Miami Heat, we talked about how is this going to affect the Celtics. They did a great job of managing things without him in the lineup. Now you add him back in. So you've got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown playing the way that they've been playing, which is at an MVP caliber level. Now you bring Kristaps Porzingis back into the picture. This Celtics team is getting even better as they move through the postseason now into the NBA Finals. So adding Porzingis back into the lineup, the only questions you should have are, is he going to be healthy enough, right? Is he going to be a guy that's, you know, he sat out the last, I don't know how many weeks, what, 4, 5, 6 weeks, something along those lines. So is he going to be a guy that's going to be healthy enough to come in and immediately have an impact? Or is there going to be a little bit of a slow kind of getting back into the swing of things for him? And that's why I've said it multiple times here on the show. I think that if you're the Celtics with Porzingis, you limit his play at first. right? I think you limit his play at first. You keep him off of that first five on the court. You put him on. You think of it in the sense of like a hockey game, where hockey has the different lines, right? You have your first five. You have your first five. Then you have your second line, your third line. I would say put Porzingis on that second line, right? Put him on that second line. Don't start him. Let him kind of warm up, go through the motions. Then get him in there on that second line after a timeout or something like that. Let him get a little bit of a rhythm going. Let him kind of get back into it slowly. Don't try to just push too much on him too soon. Because if you take a guy off the court that's been playing well in order to put Porzingis back on there, you're only hurting yourself if you're the Celtics. So I think limiting Porzingis and slowly bringing him back into the fold for the NBA Finals is probably the way to go for the Celtics. The other question for the Celtics, they've been sitting a long time. About an extra half a week to a week longer than the Dallas Mavericks have had to sit. So there's definitely going to be a situation there where you look at that and you go, is there an element of rust? These guys have not played basketball at this high caliber level in a couple of weeks. Is there going to be a little bit of a falling off period? Obviously, they were working out. Obviously, they're practicing. They're still trying to stay in that mindset. But it's hard to stay in that mindset when you're not playing in a game. Practicing and playing in a game is very different. Ask Allen Iverson. We talk about practice. At practice in a game is very different, right? With practice, you don't have the crowd, the energy that's in the building, all of that stuff that does play an impact into the game, whether you're the home team or the visiting team. You don't have that at practice. You don't have that in the weight room. You don't have that when you're out for a run. That stuff matters, and that stuff is just not there when you're training and getting ready. So when they step back on that court tonight and all those factors are back in place, is there going to be a little bit of rust on them that they need to shake off first? If so, that can open up the door for Dallas to potentially take game one. As a matter of fact, I've actually said I honestly and truthfully feel like Dallas will take game one. As a matter of fact, the way I see this series playing out is if you go back to the last time the Celtics were in the NBA Finals, when they played Golden State, how that series went, Boston ended up coming out winning the first game. I think Golden State won the next two games, took a 2-1 lead. Boston tied that up. It was 2-2. Then Golden State goes on and wins the next two, and it ends in six games. That's almost identical to how I see it playing out for this series. So if Dallas wins tonight, I'm not surprised. Boston has had to sit a little bit longer. You get a guy like Porzingis coming back in the lineup. There's a chance there for a little bit of a slow start that can open that door. Plus, again, we're sitting here talking about Boston and how they're going to have a great opportunity to win the NBA title this year and all that stuff. It's not like Dallas is going to be an easy team for them to just run through. Dallas is going to put up a fight. They've got Luka. They've got Kyrie. They've got other great pieces around those guys. And they have Jason Kidd as their head coach. They're going to be tough. They're not going out easily. They're going to put up a fight. I just think the Boston Celtics are a little bit more of a better team. I'm excited to get it going tonight. Again, game one tonight, and you can actually hear it right here on ESPN Pensacola. So definitely tune in for that. I believe it's going to be a 7 o'clock local time on ABC. So you can tune in on TV, mute your TV, and then listen to the broadcast right here. I believe Sean Kelly's going to have the call for ESPN Radio, so you can hear it right here on ESPN Pensacola 99.1. Some news from the NFL. Looks like the Kansas City Chiefs wanting to lock down their star receiver that they just drafted a couple of months ago. Xavier Worthy out of the University of Texas has agreed to a 4-year deal with that 5th-year option. That seems to be the popular thing now, is where you sign a 4-year deal. You got that 5th-year option to whether you can either accept the 5th-year and stay around, or you can opt out and become a free agent after 4. But the deal itself worth $13.8 million with a signing bonus of $6.85 million. So he is definitely getting paid there for a rookie. And I believe that is a max deal for the rookie right there with the 4 years and the 5th-year option. So Kansas City definitely wanting to have their guys stick around for quite some time. And I said it when they drafted him, when we were talking about the NFL draft, because the first episode of Glass Half Full was the Monday after the NFL draft, and when we looked back at it, talked about how they drafted Xavier Worthy to be their next Tyreek Hill, right? That smaller, speedier, shiftier guy that's just going to blow by everybody and run past everybody on the field. That's why they drafted him, and they want him to stick around, right? Tyreek didn't stick around. He ended up leaving, going to the Miami Dolphins. They want Xavier Worthy to stick around for some time, so they wanted to make sure that they got this deal done. It is done, and Patrick Mahomes is probably a very happy man right now because he's got another dangerous weapon where he can just throw the ball out there too and let him do the rest. Looks like Ryan Day, Ohio State, is there heading into 2024. Big questions around them is, can they end the streak against Michigan? Yeah, the Wolverines won the last three in this series. This is one of those series that for a series that is so historic and full of tradition and full of passion and really, let's be honest, full of hate. I mean, when you're blocking out the letters of the other school on stop signs and stuff like that, and parking signs on your campus the week of the game, that's some deep-seated hate. But the past few years, it's been very one-sided to one side or the other. You know, Ohio State won for a few years in a row. Now Michigan's got a little bit of a series going with three straight. So can they overcome what's happened in the past and end this streak that they have against Michigan? I will say this for Ryan Day's sake, he better. Because if he loses four straight to Michigan, that's like being the Alabama head coach and losing four straight to Auburn. Ask Mike Shula how that ends. Yeah, not good. Not good. It's like being a Florida coach and never being able to beat Florida State. The list goes on and on, right? You can keep going. It's like being a Georgia coach and not beating Florida. South Carolina, Clemson, same thing. If you're not beating your rivals, the fan base is not going to be happy because every fan base at the college level will tell you, in the 12-game season, we can only win one game. As long as that one game is against our most hated rival, we're okay with that. Because that's just the passion that goes into these rivalry games at the college level. So if Ryan Day can't get a win this year, if it's four straight losses for him against Michigan, yeah, there's going to be questions, is he the right guy moving forward? There will be some fans, and you know there will be. There will be some fans that come out and say, is this really the guy that we think is good enough to lead Ohio State moving forward? I will say this for him. He is set up perfectly to win this year. No Jim Harbaugh. He's now with the LA Chargers. No McCarthy at the quarterback position for Michigan. He's now with the Minnesota Vikings. No Marvin Harrison Jr. He's with the Arizona Cardinals. The big key weapons that Michigan had a year ago, a lot of them are gone. Their head coach is gone. Great opportunity for Ohio State to bounce back and end that three-year losing streak to Michigan. If Ryan Day is going to do it, this has got to be the year that he does it. If he doesn't get it done this year, like I said, those talks are going to start happening, that seat's going to get a little hot. Speaking of hot seats, couple of coaches, three to be exact, heading into 2024 that are on the hot seat. And this is not my list. This is Andy Staples' list. I just kind of wanted to go over it and kind of give my own take of these three coaches because I think Andy nailed it on the head. I think these are probably the three hottest seats heading into the college football season as far as coaches who potentially can lose their job. Probably even before this season is over. So we'll start it off. Sam Pittman at Arkansas. You want to root for Sam Pittman, right? Sam Pittman is that average Joe type guy, right? He doesn't have the complex that, you know, you might get from a Nick Saban or an Urban Meyer where, you know, they have this, you know, I'm a little better than you type kind of mentality to them. Not to say that they're, you know, that's actually how they feel. But you get what I'm saying. Like that presence that they have that makes people a little nervous around them. Sam Pittman's a guy that if you see him out, you want to go buy him a beer, right? I mean, this is a guy that after he wins a game, whenever they're asked, Coach, what you going to be doing next? What's the next step for your team? Well, I'm going to go get me a cold beer. He's an everyday Joe, right? You want to see him succeed. Arkansas wants to see him succeed. They don't want to fire him. They like this guy as their head coach. But if the results aren't there, Arkansas seriously has to start making the moves that they need to do to get them back in a better position. Because let's not forget, Arkansas, when Ryan Mallett was there, when Darren McFadden was there, that was a team that when you saw them on your schedule, you were a little nervous to play them. Now when you see Arkansas, not so nervous anymore, right? You look at it and you go, well, if we play a good game, we'll probably win it. Arkansas's got to do something to kind of get back into that rhythm of being a team that you don't want to see pop up on your schedule, especially with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma into the SEC. The conference is just getting tougher. So if he can't get it done, if Sam Pittman cannot move things forward in this season, if things do not look like they are getting better for Arkansas in this season, I think it's time for Arkansas to decide to move on. And I think the athletic department at Arkansas sees that, and I think they're ready as well. I think they actually brought in his replacement to be a part of the coaching staff. Bobby Petrino, you remember that name? Because remember when I was talking about Ryan Mallett and Darren McFadden? Who was their head coach? Bobby Petrino. He's the offensive coordinator for the Razorbacks now. Could easily just slide him there into that interim role after you fire Sam Pittman halfway through the season. Slide him into that interim role. Then at the end of the year, remove that interim tag, make him the official head coach. Bobby Petrino back as the head coach at Arkansas. Obviously, we all know what happened with the motorcycle and the reason he's left Arkansas. But I think statute of limitations is up on that, and I think they see Bobby Petrino as a guy who could potentially get them back on the right track moving forward. So we'll see what happens there. Definitely a tough start for them, though. They've got a big game. They've got to go to Stillwater and take on Oklahoma State. And we talked about Oklahoma State earlier in the week on the podcast. They are a team that you don't want to sleep on. I think Oklahoma State could be a college football playoff contender. I think they're one of the better teams in the Big 12. I think they've got a great opportunity of winning the Big 12 and finding their way into the college football playoffs. So it's going to be a tough road going to Stillwater to take on the Cowboys week two of the regular season for Sam Pittman. So that's going to be one of those crucial games. Another coach that's on the hot seat has a crucial game early in the season, and it doesn't get any earlier than week one. Billy Napier at Florida. They got to go play. They don't have to go play. They're playing in the swamp this year. Miami, that's going to be a tough game. And honestly, you could actually add Miami to this list of teams with coaches on the hot seat. But right now for this list, we're talking about the list that Andy Staples gave. He mentioned Billy Napier. Billy, the thing with Coach Napier at Florida is he has had to come in and clean up an absolute dumpster fire of a program that was just left in disarray. Will Muschamp didn't really do anything. You move on to Jim McElwain. He didn't really do anything. Things didn't really get any better there. Dan Mullen comes in. It looks like the first couple of years of Dan Mullen being the head coach. Florida is going to be back to being Florida. Florida's back. Playing for New Year's Six bowl games every year, if not getting into the college football playoff. They're back in the national spotlight. And then Dan Mullen just stopped doing his job, stopped recruiting, stopped going and trying to find players in the transfer portal, stopped playing better players. You know, I mean, look at how long he latched on to Emory Jones when you have a guy like Anthony Richardson, who is a starting quarterback now for the Indianapolis Colts in the NFL. You had him sitting on the bench, and you continue to stick with Emory Jones, who game after game after game progressively got worse for Florida those last couple of seasons that Dan Mullen was there. The decision-making that Dan Mullen made just did not make sense at times. Florida saw that. They got rid of him. They thought they were bringing in a guy in Billy Napier who could help kind of restore this program. And I will say this for Billy. He has done a great job of cleaning up the mess. You know, they say that people come into your life for a season and they have a particular purpose in your life for that season. If Billy Napier's role in the University of Florida's football program history is to clean up the mess left by Dan Mullen and those that were before him, he's done a fantastic job of doing that. He's done his job. Unfortunately, the results are just not there on the field, and that's where a coach is measured, because that's where a coach should be measured. You should be measured by wins. You should be measured by losses. So for Billy Napier, he's got a below 500 record as a head coach at the University of Florida. Just has not been where the fans expect it to be. And that's the big problem. It's not where the fans expect it to be, right? The fans don't expect to lose to Arkansas at home. A moment ago, I was talking about Arkansas. When you see them on your schedule now, it's not really a team you worry about having to play. Arkansas went into the swamp last year and beat Florida. And I think that was kind of one of those turning points for him, because there were special teams issues, there were coaching issues, personnel issues in that game that a lot of Florida fans had seen other times previously throughout that season and even the year before, to where they were in a position to where it was just like, you know, it's year two now, and we're still seeing these issues. Are these issues ever going to get better? And if they don't get better, that's a clear sign that coaching is just not being done. So for Billy Napier, he's, I think, honestly and truthfully, the last two seasons for Billy, the fans are focused on the results on the field. I think Billy's focused on cleaning up the mess inside the program altogether. Because if you hear him talk going into year three, which is what this upcoming season will be, if you hear Billy Napier talk heading into year three, it is a situation to where he is a lot more comfortable with this team and this roster that he has than he's ever been. Mostly because this is the first season where it is all his guys, right? He's not having to deal with any leftovers from Dan Mullen. These are his guys that he went out and got, whether it was through the transfer portal or through recruiting. These are his guys that he went out and found. So he is comfortable with this team. He thinks this team can do something special. If you listen to Graham Mertz, the starting quarterback for Florida, talk, he thinks this team can do something special as well, right? Josh Pate from Outkick the Coverage. Excuse me, not Outkick the Coverage. That's not Josh Pate. But Josh Pate, who is on YouTube, he actually went and toured the weekend of the spring game for Florida. He went and toured the facility, talked to the team, spent some time around them at a practice, watched the spring game. He came out of it saying, look, the results aren't there, but the way this program is being ran, it's being ran the same as Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. You walk through those facilities, you walk through those team meetings, through those practices, there's nothing different that's happening there that isn't happening here. So for a Florida fan, you got to be a little encouraged by that. So Billy Napier in Florida could be taking a couple of steps forward this year and looking good. The only problem with that is the schedule that Florida has, especially the back half of the season. It's going to be crucial for Florida to walk into that game in Jacksonville against Georgia on November 2nd, and they're essentially going to have to be undefeated at that point. Because that back half of that season is just so tough for them. Every team that they play is either ranked inside the top 10 nationally or the top 15 nationally. That is going to be such a tough schedule for them to finish through. They can look like a college football playoff team halfway through the season, and then by the time we get to the end of the year, they can barely be 500. That's how tough Florida's schedule is on the back half. So for Florida, 7-5, 8-4, I think that keeps Billy Napier around, and that's what Andy Staples says. I agree. I think that keeps him around. If he is 6-6 or worse, though, and there's a couple of losses, let's say they drop a game to A&M, who's breaking in a new head coach, going to have a lot of new faces on both sides of the ball. Let's say they drop a game against Mississippi State, or Kentucky beats them again, or Tennessee beats them in Knoxville this year. Then there's going to be some people that are going to start kind of, you know, cranking up that heat on his hot seat a little bit. If Florida is a 500 team, if they are 3-3 heading into that game in Jacksonville, I will bet a paycheck to say if Florida is 3-3 heading into that game against Jacksonville, Billy Napier is fired before they even get to the Florida State game to close out the season. Because if that team is 3-3 with the first half of the season that they have, if they are 3-3, then they're probably going to finish at best 4-8. It's just a tough back half of the season. They've got to make sure that they have success early on. And if they don't have success early on, I think Florida's looking for a new head coach heading into the 2025 season. I think out of this list, I think Sam Pittman is probably a guarantee to be fired this year. I know Arkansas would love for him to turn things around this year, but I think the SEC is just getting too deep and too tough. I think Sam Pittman is a guarantee. Billy Napier, it all depends on how you start the season at Florida for Billy Napier. You get a big win over Miami at home to start it off. You get Samford the next week, then UCF. You start off 3-0 before you start playing some SEC teams. And then you got Kentucky, Tennessee, A&M. Mississippi State, all within that front half. So Florida's got to start and be dominant early on. If they don't do that, Billy Napier could find himself out. The final coach on the list, Dave Aranda at Baylor. Look, Dave Aranda's had success, right? I mean, he won the Big 12 title a few seasons ago. But the problem with Dave Aranda is since then, it is just kind of slowly tailed off, right? They're coming off a 3-9 season in 2022, 6-7 in 2023. Just kind of seems to not be going any particular direction, just kind of sputtering around out there. And plus the Big 12 landscape, the thing that's going to be favorable for Dave Aranda that's going to be going against Sam Pittman and Billy Napier is where we talked about the SEC's getting tougher with Texas and Oklahoma. Well, what conference did Texas and Oklahoma leave? The Big 12, which is where Baylor will be playing. So I think without Texas, without Oklahoma, it's going to open it up, make it a little bit more even. I still think Oklahoma State is the class of that conference. I think they're going to be the better team in that conference. But I think that that Baylor's going to have an opportunity to be better because the conference is weaker. But if Dave Aranda can't make that happen, Dave Aranda definitely could be out the door at Baylor. I've off of this list, if I have to pick one coach that is safe, I would probably go with Dave Aranda at Baylor. Because he does have the conference title in his back pocket. That builds security like you wouldn't believe. If you've won a conference championship, if you won a championship of any kind, that's a saving grace that buys you all kinds of time. So I think Dave Aranda probably has an opportunity to stick around after this season. Billy Napier, it all depends on the start. And Sam Pittman, I hate to say it, man, but I think he is an automatic out the door by the end of the season for the Arkansas Razorbacks. So we'll see how the season plays out. I could be completely wrong. All three of these coaches could get fired. All three of them could keep their jobs because they all three have great teams this year. You don't know how these things are going to play out. Until we actually line it up on the field and play it starting August 31st, you just don't know how it's going to go. So we'll have to wait until then. I know. I'm looking at the calendar just like you are. It's, what, a little over 2 months from now? So we can make it. We can make it. We're on the back stretch. We can get there. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you have a great Thursday. I'll talk to you manana on a Finally Friday.